Hello and welcome back to the Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. I'm Sian.
And I am Tom.
And we're just a couple of super fans who met through our love of Stranger Things.
This is part two of our rewatch of season two, chapter one, Mad Max.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, it took some thinking.
But shall we dive into it?
Let's go back.
Back to our season two
back to
rewatch.
Your regularly scheduled programming.
We then move on to Bob and Joyce. So they're in Melvard's and he's going to look for a pumpkin.
He wants it in a different colour.
He wants it in green.
Well, no, he just says a different colour. He doesn't like orange. He spots a green one later.
That's it. Yes. Yes, you're right.
So he just asks, I don't suppose you have any pumpkins in a different colour, because I don't like orange.
We'll have to check in the back.
And off they go to be the lovesick teenagers that they are.
Oh my god, it's so cute. Honestly, like, Joyce looks so happy.
She is so happy with Bob.
And he is such a nice guy. Like, it's so... I was like, oh, I was really happy for her, because I can't say I wasn't rooting for her in Hopper at that point or anything like that.
No,
neither. And I'll be honest, and I said this to you, didn't I? Like, I much preferred Joyce and Bob.
Right now, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing what they can in the later seasons to try and make Joppa
happen. Yeah.
Happen, and I suppose Endgame. But yeah, right now, Joyce and Bob.
It makes sense.
I think, yeah, if Bob was alive, she'd be set.
I really think she would be, because he's everything she actually needs in a man.
Exactly, because later on, after their little flash forward to what Malevin are going to become, they're talking about movie night for Halloween, and straight away he says, it's Jonathan's turn to pick it tonight, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that stood out to me, because straight away he's acknowledging the kids. He's not just saying, oh yeah, we get to be there. I'm sure we'll have the movie on, but we're going to be making out.
Yeah.
Or something. You know, he's there and he's getting involved in the family.
And that's it. And you can... Well, he says, you know, like, oh, you never even noticed me in high school. But he's so grateful to be with her.
Yeah.
He doesn't see her like so many of Hawkins have seen Joyce, especially in season one, how
exactly.
they treat her. He doesn't see her like that. He sees her as like a prized possession.
Yeah.
Like she is the greatest gift he could ever have been given.
Exactly.
And that's lovely. And he treats her with respect. He obviously treats her sons with respect.
Yeah, that's it. He's gone in and he knows that, I suppose he knows he's the guest.
Yeah.
In the family. And so he's given these kids the respect they need when you are the guest into the family.
And he's kind and he's gentle and he's sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. And as we
know later on, he is also very brave.
Yes, yeah. And in terms of, you know, having that respect and that pride of being with Joyce, spoiler for The First Shadow, if you're going to go watch it, but if The First Shadow is canon, you know, he is very, very much trying to get the girl.
Yeah.
In terms of Joyce, through The First Shadow.
Yes.
He has his eyes set on her right from that moment.
Yeah, he's always admired her. Always.
Yeah, exactly.
As like a strong woman and, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. That's his mission for a season.
Yeah.
I like to call it a season, see? Through The First Shadow.
Oh, and that's it. And while that's happening, we do have Hopper, but he's at Merrill's pumpkin patch. All the pumpkins have died off. And there is a moment, isn't there, in that cornfield where we hear like a very strange noise.
Yeah, we hear some sort of noise and there's a lot of rustling in the cornfield. Yeah. And so Hopper, you kind of see in his face, he dreads the worst.
Yes.
He seems to anyway. And you know, he's drawn his gun, approaching the source of the sound slowly. That tension of the scene is building right up, and it's a crow.
It's a crow.
Yeah, it's just a crow. Well, the crow scared you.
But was it just a crow? Dot, dot, dot.
I think so.
I don't. I think it was already dot.
Maybe. Well, you don't know.
Because you do hear that creepy noise.
Yeah, maybe that's what made the crow jump out.
Yeah. And the thing is, he wouldn't have seen Dart at that point, because Dart would have just been quite a small slug.
Well, you know, Dustin finds him later in the dustbin and he's tiny. So
if
Dart's out there, he's going to be absolute literal larvae at the moment.
Yeah, he's only going to be small, so he's not going to see him. But that obviously opens up to something where you're like, oh God, what is lurking? What is coming?
Yeah. Because
we've heard that noise a couple of times now, you know, and it's like, oh. And then we've got, going back to the high school now, we've got Nancy and Jonathan, like, walking together. They seem to be very comfortable together now. Yeah, they've
clearly held onto a friendship.
Yes, yeah. They're talking very easily with each other. And Nancy's, you know, telling him to come to the party. Which, funnily enough, that's a bit of a change in Nancy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, her trying, telling him to come to the party. Yeah, trying to get Jonathan
out of his shell.
Yeah. And she does say, oh, maybe you'll meet someone. And that's just before she's interrupted by Steve, you know, picking her up, being all lovable with her. And it is, it's really cute.
It's
in those moments that you can tell there's a little bit more to Jonathan and Nancy, because Jonathan wanders off.
Yeah.
Because he clearly doesn't want to see the interaction.
Yeah, you were saying he clearly seems to like Nancy.
Yeah, and there is a moment where Nancy does look to where he's gone.
Yeah.
And there's almost like a small guilt on her face.
Yeah, I guess so. She quickly sets it aside.
Yeah.
Again, like you say, it's not... Steve's completely different in this season. There's not a hint of season one Steve.
No.
In here. He very much does respect Nancy for who she is, and they truly seem to be a happy couple.
And that's it. This is when we are getting Steve at his best, definitely.
Yeah.
And then we've got the scene next where the boys are, I don't know what you'd call it in America. I was going to say the schoolyard, but I don't know.
Schoolyard. If it's not called that, then let us know.
I'm not sure what the word for it is. But, because playground sounds way too young.
Playground, I feel like that's very British. Anyway.
Oh, gosh. This the problem sometimes just think being
school,
British.
I think schoolyard is the one.
Well, they're on the school grounds, if you will.
Okay.
And they're watching Max from a distance, and Mike is not impressed at all.
Oh, Mike just does not want to be there in any way, shape or form. And I was thinking about this earlier before we even watched it. And I was thinking, yeah, I fully understand that, you know, he's obviously not interested in any other girl because he's found his girl and he knows deep down that she's out there and he's going to find her.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Max hasn't done anything to deserve the disrespect.
No, she really hasn't. She's just...
It's hard because I also get it from Mike's point of view that I suppose he looks at the other two, obviously Dustin and Lucas, moving on, seemingly forgetting Ellen. He's just there like, how could you forget her?
That's it. It's very much nothing to do with Max and everything to do with Mike's insecurities that Elle is going to be forgotten and be replaced.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. He immediately goes defensive against the idea of Elle being replaced. And it's like, you know, yes, I suppose they kind of are forgetting about Elle and suddenly they're interested in this other girl.
Yeah.
But there's nothing bad about that, Mike. You know, they're not forgetting Elle. If you brought Elle up right now, they're not going to say, oh yeah, but we got Max now, we don't need Elle.
Yeah.
They're not going to say that. Neither of them will.
That's it. Mike's not very good at communicating how he's feeling.
No. And in a way, I can't blame him in this season either. Because I imagine he's probably heard so many times from them, dude, she's gone. Just, come on. You can't live like this forever.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to believe it, but we watched her vanish. I feel like especially Lucas would be the kind of person to truly think she's gone.
Yeah, I think so.
I think Lucas is definitely the kind of person that... He tried to help Mike. He wouldn't just say it as a, dude, she's gone. Come on, move on, grow up. None of them would say that, but I feel like Lucas would be the one to try and get Mike to see, in his opinion, the sense behind the situation. Elle vanished into a cloud of smoke. It's been 352 days. She's gone, Mike. Give up.
And the thing is, because obviously they're all big fans of comics and, you know, like Marvel comics, they will have seen like superheroes sacrificing themselves, and they will truly believe that that is exactly what's happened with Elle.
Yeah, and that's it. You know, I'm saying Lucas would probably be that one, and then I feel like Dustin would just have to agree with him, because Dustin's also Dustin is the most logical character.
Yeah, he is.
You know, he's probably gonna think exactly the same. You know, she vanished into a cloud of smoke. We haven't had any proof of her being out there in 352 days. Why do you think she's suddenly going to respond to you on the radio? And I know, again, obviously we know he's not saying that, but if he was trying to be open with them, if he was saying, oh, I'm calling for every night on the radio, why is day 352 going to be any different from 351?
I know.
So I get that point of view from them, but I also get Mike's sense of just not wanting to bother saying anything because he knows exactly what he's going to get back.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is it, like, they are watching Max from a distance, and then she goes inside, and Mike can't believe that he's having to follow the boys to the trash can.
Yeah, she, you know, that's it. As she gets up the stairs, she throws something in the trash. And as we were watching this, I was just thinking, why are you after what she threw in the trash? Like, what do you think she's going to have put on that?
But then, at the same time, those girls go past and they look at them like, what the hell are you doing? And that almost represents the
Doesn't
audience.
Doesn't Dustin give them a smile like, eh, nothing?
I think they all kind of do an awkward smile like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. But honestly, I do wonder what's going through their mind as they're rooting for a piece of trash that Max threw away. Like, what is that going to do?
I know. But it does make me chuckle because she's basically saying, stop spying on me, creeps.
Stop spying on me, creeps. Yeah.
So they're not as, you know, they're not as secretive as they think.
I mean, Lucas is literally staring at her with a pair of binoculars.
Yeah.
Like, my dude, season one, you were a bit of the lone spy. Here, you're standing out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
There's spying on someone, and then there is spying on someone. It's like, could you be more obvious?
I mean, you know, he gets the nickname Stalker for a reason.
Yeah, he does indeed. He wins it very much with those binoculars. Yeah.
And that's it. Again, like, I feel like a broken record saying this, but we get another one of those moments where we've had this comedy and then it is completely broken through again by the headmaster telling Will that his mum's there to pick him up.
Yeah, and his face just immediately drops.
Yeah.
Because he knows clearly that she's got a session with Sam in the lab, and he's just got to suck it up and go there and let him prod his brain for whatever's going on.
Yeah. And you can see, he's not exactly keen on going. And, like, that walk down the corridor, like, everyone's looking at him again. They clearly, you know, the rumour mill has clearly spread that he's going to some sort of counselling, or, you know, he's there's something wrong with him, you know, he has to go somewhere.
Yeah, they're doing experiments on the boy who died and came alive.
Yeah, something like that.
Which I suppose they kind of are.
And I do remember feeling a bit shocked when I saw Joyce obviously meeting up with Hopper with Will and they are at Hawkins' lab. I was a bit like, oh my God, wow.
Yeah,
he's had to go there. What the hell? Because Hopper is like the bodyguard there, isn't he, really?
He literally is being a bodyguard here, yeah.
And this is like where we first get introduced to Dr. Sam Owens, and played by Paul Reiser.
I've always said it Reiser. Yeah. I don't know if that's right.
And it's interesting there, because another bit of trivia, that Paul Reiser didn't know whether Sam Owens was a good character or a bad character.
Yeah.
Because the way the Duffy brothers, especially in season two, wrote the script as they went along, he never asked them whether his character was going to become good or evil. And I think that created a really smart dynamic for us as the watchers.
Yeah, and him as the actor as well.
Yeah.
Because like you say, the fact that he doesn't know which way his character's going, he can't then act like an evil character. He can't act like a good character.
Yeah.
He's got to really just go down the middle thinking, I could go either way here.
And that worked perfectly, because for us as an audience, that also works either way.
Exactly.
Because you've got him being really nice to Will being very honest with him, showing that there is a bit of trust that's been built there. But then at the same time, you've got people watching those screens.
Yeah.
So is he just being nice because he's being watched?
Is he just being a Connie Fraser?
Yeah.
So I remember the exact moment my opinion slid straight to the, okay, you're a good guy. It's not in this episode, obviously. I can't remember what episode it is, but I will mention it when it happens.
I think we'll have the same moment.
Go on, tease us.
I think it's when the other medical team go, well, if he's going to die, Sam, then he's going to die.
And his reaction to
And his reaction, he like bangs the table and stuff, doesn't he? And
he's basically like, don't you ever dare say that again.
He says, don't you? Yeah, he says something along the lines, doesn't he? Of like, don't you dare say that to me or something like that.
That is the exact moment that it switched for me. As soon as he said those words, I was like, okay, you're a good guy. I trust you now.
Yeah, I was 100% on him then. Yeah, absolutely. But that's it. That just shows, because that's quite a way away that we are on the fence about him for a while.
Yeah.
And that's because, like I said, he didn't play it one way or another.
Exactly. I think, to be honest, if he didn't know by then which way he was going, I imagine that line probably sold it for him as well.
Yeah.
That, you know, if he's saying that to a room... Is Joyce in there?
No, at that point.
No, so he's saying this to a room just of Hawkins lab staff.
Yeah.
And that's his reaction to them saying, well, if the boy dies, Sam, the boy dies.
Yeah.
That, and his reaction is that. Like, that nailed the... You know, that put the nail in there for me, that he was the good guy.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it. Like, at the end of the scene, like, you know, Will is going with Joyce and Hopper sees Sam from a distance. Like, that's a bit foreboding. You know, we see, like, Sam watching them.
Yes. And, I very much thought that. He was just... literally, like, nearly waiting for them to leave so that they could get busy analysing all the data from Will or something.
But ironically, you're not too far off, because the moment Hopper does go, the scientists are like, they're ready for you. But it's not what we think. It's the gate is very much spreading.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. When she came along and said they're ready for you, I assumed it was something to do with what they got from Will.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, we see the gate very much festering.
Yes.
And, we get a quite popular GIF moment in a bit of them using the flamethrower on it.
Yeah, but we get a hint that he does not like fire.
He likes it cold.
He likes it cold. And then we go back now to Lucas and Dustin. At the arcade. Well, I shouldn't say at the arcade. They're not technically there. They're hiding outside of the building.
Yes.
Waiting for Max.
Yes, indeed.
And that's it. And she arrives. And just as we all suspect...
Oh, no. This is where Lucas is using the binoculars.
Oh, is it? I didn't...
Yeah. Oh, well. Doesn't matter. literally. There they are, just over the wall. Dustin's watching them normally, and then there's Lucas just peering through binoculars like, what are you doing?
I know. Oh my God, imagine if Billy had spotted them.
Uh-huh.
It would have been near the end.
Yeah, that's it. Credits would have rolled right there with two deaths immediately.
Yes. But no, they're very lucky Billy didn't see them. And then obviously, you know, she's arguing with him as she gets out and she sticks her finger up to him and stuff. So... all we have seen so far of their relationship is just complete animosity. You know, there's no love between them.
Absolutely not.
And so she goes into the arcade and she takes her frustrations out on the games.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. This is probably the only moment she gets to vent away from what her life is, thanks to Billy.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the boys, Lucas and Dustin, are just in complete awe of her. And, they know that is the girl. And obviously, she's kind of like the girl of their dreams at this point.
Yeah, exactly. This girl that loves video games has kicked their butts on the scoreboard. They very much both immediately tunnel vision at Max. They're like, that's the girl I want to win right there.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and I mean, I can't blame them.
No, I get it.
If I was in either of their shoes.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's just, it becomes the race to get the girl for Dustin and Lucas.
And that's it, because, you know, we've said 13, isn't it? Like, they're 13 years old, yeah. And they're not the most popular in school.
No.
And then they've seen a girl in their habitat.
Yeah.
Like you said, kicking their ass.
Yeah,
at exactly. Their favourite games, knocking their top scores off. They are in complete awe of her.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose they probably are thinking, well, if she loves video games that much,
yeah.
Then surely that's a doorway into getting to know her.
Yeah, yeah. They've got something in common with this cool girl.
Exactly, yeah.
And then this is the thing, like, the next scene is really heartbreaking for us, especially as Malevin fans. And it's the Wheeler dinner.
Oh, dear.
I call it the Wheeler dinner, but really it's more like the Mike interrogation.
Yeah.
Where it's literally Karen and Ted telling him off.
Yeah, and at this point I was saying, when this scene starts, I immediately lose respect for both Karen and Ted.
Yeah.
Here. Because, you know, they're telling him to get rid of, what is it, two boxes.
Yeah.
Of his stuff. And
he says, what frustrates me is when he goes, I'll get rid of some stuff, but a lot of it has too much emotional value to me. And I don't like the way Karen goes, too much emotional value. Like she says it very sarcastically.
Yeah, as if this boy's not going to have emotions. It's like,
not a lot of 13-year-old boys would say this has sentimental value to me.
Exactly, yeah. Like, why? I can't think of any teenager that would say that, because, you know, they're going to be made get made fun out of for saying that.
Yeah.
So, you know, he is saying, oh no, they've got too much sentimental value, and she's just rolling her eyes at him. It's like, the hell's wrong with you, woman? Are you watching your son at all? Have you seen what state he's in at the moment?
And that's it. Like, this is where we first really get an acknowledgement of what Mike's been up to this past year. And he's been getting into a lot of trouble in school. He's graffitied the bathroom stalls. He's spoke back to teachers. And they, like Ted says, you know, this isn't even strike 1, 2, 3. This is strike 20.
Yeah.
So, yes, my only defence of them, but we don't see this, is potentially on strike 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe they did try a gentle parenting approach.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, like you said, maybe without us seeing, Karen has gone up to Mike and tried to be like, okay,
you can talk to me. Yeah, what's happening?
You can talk to me. What's happening? Why are you starting to act like this? What's happened?
And do you know what? I could actually imagine that was the case. I can imagine the scene of, like, Karen coming into his room, sitting on the end of his bed, and being like, if this is about what happened to Will and all this stuff. And it's probably at that point when Mike has switched off, because he's like, you don't understand.
You don't understand.
I can't explain to you what this emotional breakdown is over.
There's the problem, is it makes full logical sense for her to say, if this is about what happened to Will. But then she's going to be like, but Will's back, you know. You can put everything about all of that behind you and forget it all. You know, he's back, he's perfectly fine. He can't say anything about L, the upside down, any of that. Literally, we wish he would.
Yes.
But he can't. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
In this situation, you know. So, like I say, I would hope that this has happened. I would hope that Karen has gone to him and tried to get through and see what on earth is going on in that head of his.
Yeah.
To make him this way. But right now, all we see is them just rolling their eyes at the thought of their boy having emotions.
Yeah. It's a tough watch.
It really is. And that's it. If we forget about the whole, maybe she tried to get through to him, it just immediately, as if I had any respect for Ted before, but it makes me lose respect for them straight away. It's just like, right, neither of you are taking a moment to look at your son and see what's going on. You're just immediately just making him throw away his stuff. And it's like, don't you think there's a reason for the way he's being?
That's it. And then, like, we see Mike in that basement and he's going through stuff, and you can see the things that don't have emotional value. He's quite happy to to throw them into the box. And then he comes, first of all, across Rory, his dinosaur, the one that in season one he pressed the button to show Elle the... I was going to say the roar, but that's not really the word for a dinosaur, is it?
Yeah, I don't know what you would...
Well, the dinosaur noises. And yeah. She wasn't too impressed, bless her.
No, she just stared at it blankly like, what the hell?
And I wonder if he was thinking that because he has like this sad smile, like as if he's thinking, God, I tried to impress her with this and she just was not at all interested.
Yeah, he's probably thinking back to himself, thinking, why did I think that would impress her?
Yeah, and that's it. He has that sad smile. And then he holds his, you know, his toy Millennium Falcon, and he's just like, that's like too much. It's like a step too far, that one.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think, even if it weren't for Elle, I don't think he'd get rid of that.
No.
These boys are huge Star Wars fans. That thing is staying around for the rest of his life.
That's true, but it's clear that that is what triggers him, because he looks straight over to the pillow fort.
Yeah, like, he can remember Dustin trying to get her to fly the Millennium Falcon.
His breath is almost like caught in his throat, because he like rushes over there, and this is a very sad moment, because it's when we realise that, you know, he has been calling her for, at this point, 352 days.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, are you there, Elle? It's Mike. I'm still here.
Yeah.
And that is just heartbreaking. And he has that hope. And then he hears nothing and he moves away, doesn't he?
Well, he says, you know, just give me a sign. I won't tell anyone.
Yeah. And I won't even say anything.
That's it. I guess he gets that she's in hiding because they're looking for her. And all of that. And I just so wish that Hopper let up a bit.
I know. And that's it. As he walks away, we do hear a mic. And is that Elle?
I mean,
because it can't be Dustin, surely.
No, we know it's Dustin, obviously, calling. But that is her voice. They've definitely put Elle's, or Millie's, if you want to say that. They've definitely used her voice for that first mic.
Yeah.
That's definitely her.
Because it's almost in like a hushed whisper, isn't it? Like a...
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's very much the exact way that Elle has always said it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think... Do we... Well, we see Elle watching him in the void.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if maybe that's next episode and it's this scene from her point of view.
Possibly.
Because he's chatting away and then he shoves the mic down and she watches him walk away. But he doesn't come back, does he? So it must not be this scene. But I feel like, yeah, you can imagine from Elle's point of view, she's watching him, because we know she's watched every single one of his little chats to the nothingness. And, yeah, I suppose as she sees him get frustrated that she's not responding, I guess as she watches him walk away, she does try to call.
Yeah.
And... the whether it is the Supercom picking that up or whether it's just his subconscious, because he says later he could tell when she was there, he sensed her in the void.
Yeah.
So maybe he's just genuinely just hearing her for the sake of hearing her. Either way, it's her.
Yeah.
Before Dustin, he definitely hears her voice.
And that's it. And when Dustin does break through, he's like, why are you on this channel again? And then obviously says about Max, and Mike is not interested whatsoever.
To the point that he just turns off his radio. He just turns it off. He's like, oh, just shut up. I don't care about Max.
Yeah, and storms off. And that's the thing, like, the Wheeler siblings, obviously not Holly, but the Wheeler siblings are struggling at this moment, because we've got this happening at the same time that Nancy is having a KFC dinner with Barb's parents and Steve.
Yeah, and they have just revealed the massive bombshell that they are selling their house to fund an investigation by Murray Bauman.
Yeah.
The same man that was just in the police station being rinsed the hell out of for coming up with these alien and Russian theories.
Yeah.
And now they're selling their house to fund it. I'm like, Jesus, Murray, how much do you charge?
I know, but this is it. Like, he's a private investigator. And they clearly are desperate. I wonder how many avenues they've gone down before.
Yeah, how much money have they already wasted?
Exactly. Trying I'm guessing get... quite a lot, considering that they are now moving on to selling their house.
Exactly, that's a big step to take.
And you just can't even imagine how Nancy feels in this moment. The guilt that she feels, the trauma that she's having to look them in the eyes, knowing that their daughter is dead. That must be messing with her mentally.
Well, she has
so
to
much.
Go off and cry in the bathroom because it is too much for her.
And that's it. She can see pictures of Barb at every avenue.
Yeah.
She's all over the
exactly.
place.
Exactly. She is all over the place, and yet she knows full well that she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, that is the hardest thing, surely.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to lie to their faces and, see these pictures of who was your best friend.
Again, like, we've mentioned this before, but it's sad that Nancy and Mike couldn't communicate.
I absolutely hate the fact that they can't communicate, because I feel like that's such a silly thing. I get their siblings, normally hate each other, but...
But when you've been through a shared trauma like this...
When you've been through a shared trauma like this, you'd think they'd grow up a bit and talk about these things.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I feel like that's... I personally think that's a bit of silly writing, that they've not utilised each other for a bit of counselling here and there.
Yeah, but that kind of goes nicely into a segue of Jonathan and Will. Because they're almost the opposite in this situation now.
Yeah.
Because you've got, Will drawing the zombie boy, comic, if you will.
Yeah.
And you've got Jonathan... coming to speak to him and showing an interest, and then Will opens up about, that's what people call me and it's because I'm a freak and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then you get that absolutely golden line of Jonathan saying, I'm a freak, being a freak's the best. And Will's like, is that why you don't have any friends? Ben!
Oh, William, here's your brother trying to help you, and you're just like, so that's why you're a loner.
And this is the thing, it's quite a lovely scene because, first of all, Jonathan's telling him that his individuality is what makes him special. Who wants to be normal?
Who wants to be normal, exactly. That's it. Would you rather Bowie or Kenny Rogers?
Yeah, and then, of course, that's when Bob comes in going, Kenny Rogers,
I love Kenny Rogers.
But again, it just shows that Bob is a very safe man.
Yes, exactly. And they both clearly know that because they're both laughing at him as he goes off. And I feel like if they didn't want him there, they wouldn't be laughing at him saying that. They'd be rolling their eyes and thinking, oh, when are you going to leave?
Yeah, definitely.
But no, I think they're laughing at his joke. Well, not a joke, they're just laughing at him being him. And I feel like they fully expect him to... stay around.
Yeah.
I suppose in a way they're probably really happy that they've now got a bit of a father figure.
Yeah. That's it. And he is so good for Joyce.
Yes.
And they might find him maybe a bit boring or something like that. But this sounds awful, but boring is what she needs. She needs normality.
Yes.
Ironically.
That's exactly what she needs at the moment after everything she's been through. She needs as bland as you get.
Yeah.
And, I think he's good for Joyce, but I well and truly think he's good for the boys as well. And honestly, in the short amount of time we have him here, the longest they've been together is a year.
Yeah.
Or so. So... in that amount of time and in the time of season two, he's already been much more of a dad and father to these boys than Lonnie ever has.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He couldn't be more polar opposite to Lonnie if he tried.
Exactly.
And
that's it,
That's it. Like, when they're all watching the movie together and the phone rings and you can see the trauma that causes Joyce, she must have explained it to Bob because... he's really calm with her. And
yeah.
He's like, it's okay.
Obviously.
Probably just a prank caller,
Yeah, that's it. It's
everyone's safe kind of thing.
I do wonder what she said to Bob because she can't explain the upside down.
No.
She can't go ratting out where Will was. So what does he know?
Maybe she said something like, because there's probably been, well, there clearly has been more occasions where that phone has rang and she has jumped out of her skin. Yeah. And she's probably had to explain it to him as in, when Will was missing, that phone was off the hook kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? That phone was my lifeline.
And I was waiting, and I was waiting and waiting for a phone call from Will or to know he was safe. So she's probably explained it like that, I imagine.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, hearing that phone just goes through her, you know?
Yes, exactly. To the point that you wonder why it's even plugged in if she's not answering it.
Yeah. but again, it just shows Bob's lovely character, you know, where he's just able to soothe her that it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and I agree with what you're wondering. Who is calling?
Who is calling? Although I said it's probably just Dustin saying, Max is Mad Max.
Yeah. Exactly that.
That would have been actually quite funny if they had answered it. If they'd made like a big scene of like Joyce very slowly and stressfully walking up to that phone, her breathing all heavy, and she picks up the receiver and then it's like, Will, is that you? It's Dustin.
She flinches from Dustin's voice ringing in her ears. Yeah.
It's Max, it's Mad Max. That would have been quite funny, I feel. They should have done that.
Yet again, why aren't we writers?
I know, right? And then we have the scene with Will. He's gone to the bathroom in the middle of the night. And we get another transition into the Upside Down.
Yeah.
At the same time that this happened, there's like a, I can't think of the word, like a resurgence of electricity, energy, yeah, going on at the lab.
Where a load of alarms go off behind that guy's back.
Yeah, something is happening.
Something very much is happening. The alarms are going crazy in Hawkins' lab, and Will's having that vision again.
And what Will sees in that vision, in the distance, is a huge black shadow creature.
Yeah, obviously known as the Mind Flayer later on.
Yeah.
But for now, he just sees this big beast looming above.
Yeah, honestly, like when that came up when we were watching it today, I was very glad that at that point Harry was distracted playing with something else, because I was like, oh my god, please don't tell me I'm giving our child nightmares here. But he was playing with something else, because it's a creepy scene.
It is.
Imagine seeing that as like a 13-year-old child.
Yeah, well, think, yeah, you're literally seeing it as if it's real and in your face.
Yeah,
I mean, first of all, imagine being taken to the Upside Down and having to live there for a week as a 12-year-old.
Yes.
But regardless, yeah.
It is. It's really creepy. And honestly, I, in these moments, I have so much kind of respect for Will, because he is going through such a trauma, but it's not ending. It's continuing. It's getting worse.
Sam says himself it's got to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, because Sam has spoken to Joyce and said, you know, this is all down to PTSD.
Yeah. Which, you know, as Hopper tells you, you know, that's real.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, that's not exactly what's going on here.
Yeah. I would just like to apologise. I don't think you can, but if anyone can hear my stomach keeps rumbling. This is pregnancy life for you people.
Yeah, she has siphoned all the food you've had.
Yeah.
And now you need more.
Do you know what? In a way, she's almost like the Mind Flayer. She's like sucking on my energy.
Yeah.
And now she's like, give me more.
Give me more. Give me more.
Oh my God. My tummy is literally loud. You'll be able to hear it in a minute. But also, were you just trying to sing something from... Was that meant to be Grease?
I don't know. It's just in my head.
That was so wrong.
Oh, it's Tell Me More, isn't it?
It is Tell Me More, and you've never seen Grease, which upsets me deeply.
I need to fix that.
I keep saying this. We will watch Grease together. Honestly, viewers, he has not watched Grease, and it annoys me. So our final scene in this first episode is we see Hopper. You know, he's parked up in the woods, and he's walking through. And we all know from like season one, we're like, oh, that's not his usual house.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, we've only seen that trailer.
Yeah.
Before this.
Yeah. And he approaches like quite a small cabin and he does the special knock.
Yeah.
And you and me had different thoughts here, didn't we? Because at this point, I didn't have any inclination of Elle. I just assumed that someone had unlocked the door and then hurried away.
Yeah, well...
But you think it'd be too quick.
It was way too quick. I mean, first of all, you mentioned the special knock, and isn't it 213?
I think. It?
And if I remember right, that is Morse code for us.
Oh, is it?
It is indeed.
Oh, there you go. Another little bit of trivia there.
Yeah. But yeah, back on to the fact that as soon as he finished, literally the millisecond he finishes knocking, you hear multiple locks.
Yeah.
And then as soon as those locks are gone, he opens the door and nobody's there. Immediately I was like, oh yeah, Al's here.
Yeah.
Straight away. It was too obvious for me. I get what you're saying in the sense that someone might have just unlocked the door and run off, but
yeah.
Who else would it be?
I know, that? I know. And I'm not even sure. But at that moment in time, I just remember that the second for me that I was like, took a gasp of air and was like, hell, was when the camera panned over the table and you saw a half-eaten Eggo.
Yeah. I mean, that settles it straight away. And then, of course, I remember I got a smile on my face when you first hear her say, no signal.
And funnily enough, just like he says, like, he gets her to repeat it, I actually didn't hear what she said first time either.
Neither.
But I was like, I can hear that voice.
That's Elle. Yeah, that, you know, that you recognise her voice.
Yeah. And then she says it again.
Louder and clearer, yeah.
And then she appears at the table with him and you're like, Elle!
Yeah.
Because, first of all, she's not in a grimy hospital gown or anything like that.
Or a Nancy's dress.
Oh, Nancy's dress. She's not grubby whatsoever. She's clean. She looks so cute.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, obviously, the biggest change
is
that hair on her head. Yeah. She's not just bald anymore. She's got one hell of a poofy hairstyle going on.
And this is the thing. Like, she can carry any hairstyle. Like, she really can. But that lovely curly hair is such a representation of her freedom.
Yeah. I still think this is my favourite Elle look.
Yeah?
Because it is just that, like you say, that freedom.
No one has forced her to cut her hair.
Nobody's
showing that the time has gone and her hair, for the first time ever, has finally been allowed to grow.
Well, that's it. I mean, they've had Elle since birth, so her hair has never grown.
Never.
I mean, do you think they would have let it grow while she was a kid? I don't think so. I don't think they would have. I don't think they would have done that to then just be like, oh yeah, we're going to start shaving it now.
No, I don't think they'd have ever let it grow because in season 4, we see the younger ones, don't we?
I know they're all shaved, but I mean like before they start using them for tests. Because obviously they can't really test on a baby.
Although I say all this, I'm like, no, adamantly no, they'd never have let her hair grow. But then, again, season 1 is very different, isn't it? But, I'm saying season 1. Season 2, we get the scene of Terry and Elle, little Elle, has got a decent amount of hair.
When she's with Callie.
Yeah, when she's with Callie.
Yeah, in the rainbow room.
They both do.
They both got hair, yeah.
See, that's thrown us both now, because we were adamantly like, no, they've always shaved her head.
Yeah.
But to be honest, little Elle didn't remember that scene. So for Elle, this is the first time her hair has grown.
Well, this is it. It's like all I was going to say is if this is the very first time her hair's grown, then it's never taken shape before.
No.
So, yeah, it's literally a case of freedom in the sense that it's never been able to take a shape. So it's never known whether it's going to go curly or if it's just going to go straight. But nope, this is... It was officially coined Poofy Elle in the fandom at one point.
Poofy Elle, yeah.
So, yeah, I personally do think this is my favourite Elle style, just in the sense of that freedom. And
I love her little dungarees as well. I just think she looks so cute.
Yeah.
And I just, it's just so, I'm happy to see her in the warmth, eating, you know, looking well.
It. Yeah, obviously... Obviously, we want Mike to be able to know and to be able to see her here.
Yeah.
And I still think we're robbed of them seeing each other in their styles in this season.
Yeah.
But either way, I'm happy for her because she's got herself a bit of a family.
So am I, because you see actually a lovely little dynamic between Hopper and Elle. Like, he goes from being quite stern to suddenly he's talking to her with affection.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, she says about it being, like, 8:15, and he's like, it's 8:15, and you can tell that he's been teaching her. And obviously we do get a bit of sadness over 8:15, because we know she's got that kind of, communication from Mike.
Yeah, it's Mike that taught her how to read the time like that, just saying the numbers out, because that's what appears on a digital clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. So I'm very happy for her. Obviously, she's not stuck out in the woods or anything.
Yeah, and we don't know how long she's been with Hopper.
No, we don't. They've clearly got a dynamic going, so it's been a while.
Yeah, clearly,
but we don't know how long it took for him to find her.
Yeah.
You know.
And to be honest,
how he found her.
When she did appear, especially when Hopper does talk to her kind of like with affection and things are a bit more softer between them as they start to eat.
Yeah.
I did kind of take a deep breath because I was like, thank God she's safe.
Exactly.
She's it with Hopper. She is safe.
It's such a huge relief.
Yeah.
That she's with someone who wants her safe.
Yeah.
Who very much cares for her and, yeah, wouldn't let any harm come to her.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, again, Mike might not be in the know. Apparently that was a tongue tie. But at least she has Hopper keeping her safe.
Definitely. And I was in mixed kind of emotions about this because I was so relieved that Hopper's keeping her safe. But then my heart broke because I was like, oh my God, Mike, she is so close to you.
Yeah, I know. And
you don't know.
I know. I was thinking that. I was just thinking, if you only knew that she was literally, practically around the corner, you would not be losing your mind right now, you poor soul. You're losing your mind, not knowing if she's alive or dead or whatever, if she's safe or whatever. She's literally with Hopper right now eating some microwave meals and Eggos.
Yeah, and I literally do remember from the first time I watched it thinking, right, okay, how long before Mike knows she's here?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a hell of a lot longer than I would like.
They really kept it going, and I remember watching it, and I was just screaming. Because literally, this is all Mike needs to be back to himself, is to know that she's safe there.
Yeah.
That's all he needs, is just Hopper to pull him to the side and say, right, she's safe.
That's all that
I found her. She's with me. The end.
But I hate to say but.
Mike would not let it stop there.
No, he wouldn't. He would not let that lie.
He would not let that lie. He would.
He'd be following him. He'd be following him.
Following his every steps. Literally clinging onto his legs for dear life while Hopper's walking away and Mike's just being dragged along the floor because he's clinging onto his boots.
Mike would literally become the stalker. Yeah. Not Lucas.
Yeah.
He would follow Hopper's every move and potentially, you know, Mike might still be being tracked to an extent.
This is it. I get Hopper from that perspective that Mike, I'd be amazed if he's not being watched.
Because he does say in the next episode when the agents are trying to get stuff out of him, he says, even if I did know where she was, I would never tell you.
Exactly. So they're going to be like, well, we don't need you to tell us. We're just going to listen to your every word.
And that's it. So if they're going to be listening in or following anyone, it would be Mike.
They're going to be following the person she fell in love with.
Yeah. I mean, they don't know that information.
No, they don't. But
they can
still
tell from Mike's point of view that there is real loyalty there.
Exactly. So, yeah, they'd be stupid for not bugging the Wheeler house.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. So yeah, I get Hopper's point of view from there, but it's like, just meet him in school or something. I don't know. Just surely, we know for a fact Elle has been telling Hopper how desperate Mike is.
Yeah.
Because we get a scene where she's telling him, you know, he says he needs me.
Yeah.
And all of that. That's not going to be the first time, because Hopper already knows she's watching Mike.
Yeah.
And he's asking how he is. So she's clearly told him before that he's losing his mind.
Yes.
He's literally going insane, calling out for me every single day, and we're just letting him sit there with his brain rotting away, thinking I'm dead or something.
Justice like, for Mike. It's not fair.
Yeah, just do something. Let this poor boy out of his misery. Just let him know that she's safe.
Yeah. But that's it. Like, in hindsight of watching that first episode of season two for the first time, I do remember having a sense of relief that, thank God, we know where Elle is.
Yeah.
After just the first episode.
Yes.
And she is safe.
Exactly, yeah. I agree there. You know, even if Mike is losing her mind, Elle is safe.
Because they could have done something horrible where, you know, where her and Mike are reunited, which is one of my favourite scenes. Yeah. But that could be like the first time we saw Elle this season.
It could have been.
It could have literally been.
And she could have. She could have been fending off in the woods until that moment.
Yeah. Oh God, that would have been atrocious. And yeah, so I was really grateful actually that we got to see her safe and well in the first episode.
Yeah. That's it. They pretty much ripped that bandage off for us immediately. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yes. Yeah, we're thankful for some things.
Yeah, you kept us tortured on the Malevolent front, but at least we know Elle's safe. That's an important step.
Absolutely. And I think, really, that's everything to cover.
I think so. That's where the episode ends.
Yeah. And this will have been part two of the first episode, because there was just so much to cover.
Yeah, that's it. Obviously, you know, we've recorded this straight, so we've only just decided we're splitting this.
Yes.
But, yeah, that's the end of part two.
So thank you very much for watching, and we'll be back soon with chapter... Oh, wait.
It's going to be chapter three. Unless we say chapter one, part two.
Yes, that's a good point. But actually what I was getting off was I was trying to think of what the next chapter of season two of Stranger Things was called, and I couldn't think.
Nope, I'm not even gonna try because I don't know.
So we've probably confused you enough now, so
we're gonna stop rambling. Just press the stop button. Just end it.
Just end it now.
You do it. I'm too lazy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.